Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I had an affair with a guy named Leo. I didn't know he was married, and he almost got me killed, girl. Tell me what's wrong with the man. Let me tell you about the man.
Trying to do us in.
If only do you be.
Tell me what's wrong with the man.
And he'll be in.
Trying to do us in.
The new search for old soul. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the program, an earlier era of soulful music gets its due with small batch reissues. And later, the Portuguese-born singer-songwriter Sara Tavares keeps the musical tradition of Cape Verde alive with a live performance in our studio. The 1960s and 70s are sometimes called the golden era of soul. We're all familiar with the smooth, pop-flavored soul of Detroit's Motown Records and the raw and funky version released by Stax Records in Memphis. But as it turns out, the soul music well wasn't empty. A handful of independent labels are compiling and reissuing songs that people haven't heard for a very long time. Now some of those artists are on tour. In a moment, we'll talk to one of them, the blues and soul singer Syl Johnson. But first, we're joined by Ben Greenman, editor at The New Yorker magazine and author of the rock novel Please Step Back. Ben, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hey, John, how are you?
All right. So, I mean, the idea of reissues, this is nothing new, but what's making this latest batch of these kind of small batch, sounds like I'm talking about bourbon here, but or single malt scotch or something, these small batch releases, what makes them so special?
Well, I think, as you say, there's always been this trend of reissuing things and helping us to remember the past so we don't go empty-handed into the future. But this specific thing, which is, it's not just generic time capsules, it's about soul music and specifically about local scenes. And I think there's a couple things. I think soul music is perceived as authentic and as a kind of genuine self-expression. And that rediscovering it is, I don't know if I'd say religious, but I think it is almost a spiritual process for people. It's not just about record collecting. It feeds this belief that there was an original time when things were more pure and more more real in some way.
So you say that people say this. Do you believe it?
I believe it. I think depending on the music fan, you know, the kind of music that appeals to you in that way may vary. There may be people who feel that way about country sessions or folk music. For me, this is the kind of music that interests me. So these small batch reissues are, you know, are things that have that effect on me.
So, you know, it seems like a lot of these labels, and we're talking about labels like Numero Group and Wax Poetics, Soul Jazz, even Folkways in a sense, you know, I guess they were kind of the first to do this. They're really looking for the things that haven't been heard in a long time and maybe haven't been heard at all outside of a, you know, as the saying goes, a small circle of friends. Is it a case of, you know, the more obscure, the more cred you get for this sort of reissue?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think so in a way, but I think that if you take the Numero Group, which are that's the most extensive series, at least in the last couple of years, and that's a very specific project because they're reanimating local scenes from the 60s and 70s, and to me that's a big deal because everybody knows Motown in Detroit or Stax in Memphis or Philly Soul, but there's so much that we don't know about other cities like Miami or Wichita or Columbus, Ohio, unless we were there, and we weren't. You know, we weren't there at this time. So it's a little hard to understand in the era of the Internet when everything is everywhere. But there were these regional hits, regional stars, regional charts, regional stores. And I think reanimating those places, there's people, there's characters. They're almost like they are documentaries, these records. So it's not just about bringing the music back. It's about bringing the entire world of this music back.
So 1967, Stormy records a song called The Devastator. What's the impact of hearing this over 40 years later?
Well, for me, the first thing for that particular song is that it sounds just like Day Tripper, but for the Beatles song. But I think you hear these things and you start to realize it. You know, it fills in the gaps. You know that there were stylistics who weren't in Philadelphia, like the Caldirons, or there were Mary Wells who weren't in Detroit, like this woman, Helene Smith, in Miami. And there were James Browns everywhere. You know, and they didn't rise to the level of the James Brown. They weren't innovators in the way he was, but they were working everywhere. These people, these stars, were making music everywhere. They were selling records. You know, we're not uncovering people who are utter unknowns. They were known in their place and their time.
So here's Stormy. Their place and time was 1967. The Devastator from 1967 by Stormy, although as Ben Greenman of The New Yorker told us, the day tripper thing, especially at the beginning of the song, Ben, is really striking. Where was this band from?
I believe that's a Chicago band, right? That's on the Twinight set. And I don't know, because I don't have the liner notes in front of me, a tremendous amount about them. What I was going to say when you were playing it that really strikes me is that when you go and you read, and all of these sets, the other thing we should point out is that they're not just collecting music. They're lavishly and lovingly annotated. They have historical photos. When people are still alive, they are interviewing them, and this leads to what we'll talk about later, which is bringing some of these artists back on the road if they're still alive. But when you look at these sets and you see what they're rebuilding for us, to me they're like little films. I mean, not just documentaries, but they're very rich experiences, and you start to try to figure out when you read the liner notes about the local scenes. There's a Phoenix set about this guy named the record label is called Mighty, I believe, and it's a guy named Mike Lannenberg, who was a suburban white kid from California who became sort of the Berry Gordy of Phoenix. And there's you go back and you see how everybody fit. There were battles between bands. There was the diva at the label. There was the kid who was the Michael Jackson of, you know, whatever, of Miami or of Central Wichita. Mm-hmm. You know, so to me, it's really fascinating to take what is the received history of soul music, which is basically Motown, Stax, Philadelphia. That's the, you know, everybody knows that. And then you go back and you look at some of these places, which are always very rich, but this makes them that much richer.
So let me, you mentioned, you know, the guy in Phoenix, this white guy running this soul label. Here's a comment on the Soundcheck page from Contra in Brooklyn, who writes, what many fail to realize is that these labels, for the most part, are run by white record nerds who are pretty much only putting out these records for other like-minded folks. Now, yeah, some of these lost gems are worthy of rediscovery, others are mostly overkill, but what about, I mean, who is this for?
Yeah, well, I think that's always the question, and I don't have the balance sheet, so I don't know what they decide. I think within reason it's for everyone, and I think you just have to decide. I think that if you talk about Light in the Attic, and there's been reissues by this guy named Rodriguez and by Betty Davis, and depending on who you are, if you like that artist, it's for you. I think the Numero Group ones are a little different, as I said, because they have more context around them.
Mm-hmm. But in the case of Rodriguez, who was from Michigan and was obscure back in 1970, more popular now in 2009 with the reissue of his 1970 disc, Coming From Reality.
Have you ever kissed the sunshine? Walk between the rain? Well, just climb up on my music and my songs will set you free. Well, just climb up on my music and from there jump off with me.
The artist's name is Rodriguez. Climb Up on My Music is from a 1970 LP that he released called Coming From Reality. He lapsed into obscurity. He recorded in obscurity, remained in obscurity. Unknown to him, he became kind of a cult figure abroad a couple of years ago, and the reissue of this album last year has brought Rodriguez back to the music world in a big way. We're speaking with Ben Greenman, editor at The New Yorker magazine, author of the rock novel Please Step Back, and joining me now is Syl Johnson, singer and songwriter behind such soul recordings as Different Strokes and Is It Because I'm Black and so many others. And Syl, there's a lot to talk about, but let me start by asking you a variation of the question I just asked Ben. Your stuff is being reissued. It's finding a new audience. Who is that new audience?
First of all, let's say hi to Ben and also to you, John.
Hi.
And I was listening to Ben. Ben was a little cloudy on some of his things, but not really. Chicago. Have you heard of Record Row?
Record Row.
Record Row. Compiled of, some people say Jewish, but I say Jewish people.
That's on South Michigan, the Record Row?
Yeah, they came and they couldn't get jobs, these people. So they went into business. And Record Row covered practically every city in America with beginning artists. If you haven't heard of it, you should try to learn about Record Row. It was every record company had something to do with Record Row, Michigan Avenue. And that's the artist Stormy. This label was my label. It was called Twilight. Now, you say, why Twilight and then Twilight?
Right.
Well, it was stolen from me, and I ain't going to go into all of that. And they changed the name of it to Twi-N-I-G-H-T. Stormy was the second release on Twilight, L-I-G-H-T.
Mm-hmm.
Socket to Me was my first release.
That was your song.
That was my song, my company, on my label, and it was a hit. Stormy was the second, and Different Strokes was the third.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. This is sort of exactly what we were saying. That there was a company out of California or something that owned the rights to Twilight, something like that.
I never heard of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's what I had read in there. But what I was going to say is that this is exactly what we were saying. There are all these stories that it's not just the records. It's partly the music, but it's the business behind it. It's the artist. It's the people that they worked with. It's the people that they worked against. That's what's very interesting to me about these reissues. It's not just having the records, although it's great to have the records.
But listen to me closely now. Ace released some of my records, a lot of my records, and in the 90s, and they called it Twilight. There's that Twilight, and there's a Twilight again.
So there's a kind of an element, it sounds like, of setting the record straight.
The record straight,
it was
Twilight, and I never was approached by anyone said that they owned the rights to Twilight. Therefore, we are still using Twilight. Twilight is my label. Twilight is my label.
Right.
And I gained the rights to my label 2007, July 10th, Judge Grady.
So that's United like 30, 30 years
no,
later you've got...
40. 40.
40, right.
Judge 67, Grady,
yeah, yeah.
United States District Court,
okay.
Northern Division, Eastern.
Okay, but Syl, after all that, you still haven't answered my question. Who's the audience now? You look out, you're playing tomorrow night at the Music Hall in Williamsburg. You've been out on the road. When you look out in that crowd, are they 20-something hipsters? Are they 70-year-old, you know, folks from back home? What is it?
I can't quite explain it, but I got an idea. You know, the hip-hoppers, they didn't want to go past 70 sampling the music. So the hip-hop artists are young people. And I guess the young people say, well, we want to see some of those artists that made that music, and if they're alive, we want to go and see them. I did a tour in Australia this year, and my producer said, I tell you what, you're going to be surprised that your audience are going to be above 20 years old.
Hmm.
I'm like, what? He said, yeah, they're going to be very young. And sure enough, I had a 6-city sellout in Australia, 2 in New Zealand, and 4 in Australia, Melbourne, Sydney, Leo, and Perth.
So, Syl, you said back in with your record label with Twilight, the first song was Come On, Sock It To Me.
Yes,
that
sir.
Was the first song on the label. Are you still singing that song when you do these shows?
I have to.
And we have to play some of it. Syl Johnson. music from my guest, Syl Johnson. Come on, sock it to me. 1967. Syl Johnson recording as part of the Chicago soul music scene. That's where Syl still lives. And we are talking about the current trend towards reissues of obscure, some would say eccentric soul. And in fact, Syl Johnson is part of tomorrow night's concert called The Eccentric Soul Review at the Music Hall of Williamsburg at 8 p.m., along with Missy D and the Notations and Ronaldo Domino. And Syl, do you consider your soul music eccentric?
Yeah.
I do?
Yes.
Why?
Well, that's just my style. Right.
So you weren't going for the kind of pop mainstream sound?
No, not really. I started off in music with blues. Mm-hmm. But I was a guitar player, and I wanted, when I became a singer, I didn't want to sing blues. I like blues, but I wanted to sing, because I went to go to music school a little bit then, and I knew different chord changes. Blues is comprised of three changes, for the one, the two, and the five. Mm-hmm. So W.C. Handy, they say he discovered blues. No. He wrote down what they were playing. He said, oh, I know what they're playing, the one, the four, and the five. He could use the one, the four, and the five
right.
two or three different ways.
So you knew other chords wanted to have the opportunity, so you fleshed things out a bit, and you end up with this eccentric soul music. And Ben Greenman from The New Yorker, this seems to be, you know, as we've been talking about, something that the more obscure, the more regional, the more overlooked it is, the more these labels are interested in resurrecting it, in reviving it. Do we need to preserve everything that everybody ever did?
It's easier to do it in some ways just because of all the things we've talked about this, you know, in other programs, that because of the internet, because everything can be stored. In a way, it's easier to connect it. I think we do. In a sense, we do, because the story should never be lost. People can either take it or leave it. I mean, we're not forcing anyone to listen to it. As like Syl was saying, Different Strokes was sampled by Wu-Tang Clan is probably the most famous. I know a bunch of people did it, but that's
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, so then when people hear it there, and then they decide, okay, well, I'd like to learn more, or that sounds great, I want to hear more of that. It should, as far as I'm concerned, it should always be available. There's lots of other questions. Does the money get to the right people in the right fashion? Does the, you know, is the record set straight? But every single time I read one of these booklets, and you find out about, you know, there's this Smart's Palace, which is one of the series in Eccentric Soul, about Wichita. And it's a great story, just how this scene happened, who was at the center of it, how the artists were developed. So do we have to preserve it? I don't know, but I don't see why we wouldn't.
All right. Well, Cynthia from Long Island asks, aren't reissues a lot cheaper for the record companies than breaking a new artist? I mean, you know, there's certainly something to be said for finding those people who are still doing this kind of music these days and trying to break them instead of, you know, digging into the historical bin of music history, I guess, and coming up with things from the 60s and 70s. But that is what labels like Numero Group and Wax Poetics and Soul Jazz are doing. And this is a little bit of some music from about the year 1970 or so. The Revolution of St. Vincent.
I wonder what you've done. If you were a bit cooler, our life could be so much fun. If you would just do something about that funny way, 'cause it's not so much what you do, no, it's the little thing.
The Revolution of St. Vincent and the Little Things You Say from an album called Calypso 70, Caribbean Soul. Up next, how a much-sampled late 60s hit by Syl Johnson became the foundation for a number of hip-hop tracks. And coming up later, Sarah Tavares performs a very different brand of soul music, blending it with the sounds of her native Cape Verde Islands. She'll perform live in our studio.
Dei a volta ao mundo na curva redonda do teu gingar. O amor é lindo, o amor é belo, o amor é sábio, o amor é titi, tua boca.
beleza brilha todos os dias.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
It's a defense mechanism. I find myself thinking, do we really need to save everything from everybody? If I have James Brown, do I need some old singles cut in a studio in northern Michigan almost 40 years ago? As defense mechanisms go, this one is pretty pathetic, because all it takes is listening to some of these reissues to say, yeah, that was worth it.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we're talking today about the return of long-neglected soul music in the form of reissued albums on small, independent labels. One artist who will get a retrospective box set soon is our guest Syl Johnson, the blues and soul singer, who released this song, Is It Because I'm Black? And one of his other songs, called Different Strokes, turned out to be a favorite sample source for groups ranging from Boogie Down Productions to the Wu-Tang Clan. Syl's still with me here in our studio. Ben Greenman from the New Yorker magazine still with us on the phone. And Syl, Different Strokes has turned out to be, decades after you recorded it, an unexpected hit in a most unlikely way.
Yes, so let me tell you about a little story about Different Strokes. I needed an intro, and I had three singers, background singers, Minnie Riperton, Jackie Ross, Fontella Bass.
Who? Wow, wait a minute. Minnie Riperton and Fontella Bass were...
And Jackie Ross, they were young girls. And I said, who want to laugh? See, it, baby, you're laughing, but I'll be around for a while. Can't you dig it by watching my style? So I need an intro. It just came out the clear blue. I wanted to get a laugh. So I told the drummer, pop, tutum, tum, pop, pitum, tum, which was Morris Jennings, the drummer that was with Rambert Lewis. And Jackie said, Minnie said, Fontella said, no. Minnie said, I'll do it. I go, She go, baby, you're laughing. And that was the thing that the rappers fell in love. They made it their theme, the grunt and the laugh. Everybody.
She wasn't yet Minnie Riperton, was she? She was using a different name back in those days.
Her name was Andrea Davis.
Right. But she is the one that you hear laughing with Syl Johnson at the beginning of the song Different Strokes. '67 song by Syl Johnson called Different Strokes. Have you lost track of the amount of times that hip-hop producers have sampled this song?
1,000 times and over. I was in France being interviewed by a rap magazine. The guy came, he said, at least 9 French rappers have sampled that song, Different Strokes. I'm like, what? So I found out that 7 Japanese hip-hop artists had sampled it.
Doesn't that mean 9 checks coming from France and 7 checks coming from Japan? Shouldn't it mean that?
I don't remember any checks coming from France.
But you've done,
or Japan. Or
but
Japan.
The song has done all right
for
you
now. One other thing I want to say about Different Strokes. Sly the Family Stone, his name is Sylvester Stewart. He was a disc jockey in San Francisco, Sylvester Stewart.
Later to be Sly, of Sly and the Family Stone.
My record was number one. He sent me, da 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 dee da ba da 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 da, Different Strokes, for different folks. I was reading it in my car on the Dan Ryan Expressway. I read a little music, and the melody went, da-dee-dee-da-da. I was like, crap. I threw it out the window, and it turned out to be Everyday People.
Ben, in your novel, you have a character who sort of loosely, we talked about this last time you were on the show, inspired by Sly, by you know, the guy who wrote that song. Have you heard this tale before?
I haven't heard that story. What I was gonna mention though is that the DJs, in a way, turned into the hip hop artists. Right. This is sort of the thing that's happened, and that Sil mentioned that the hip hop artists love the beginning of that song. They ended up being the people who listened, in a way, the most closely to these old records, pulled out the moments. Sometimes they were isolating, you know, one moment or one effect. But they ended up being the people who really, there are fans who do it too, but the fans aren't making music or playing music. They're the people who are able to put the parts that they loved into new songs and to reuse them and send people back to the originals. In my mind, they're sort of doing what the DJs used to do, playing the records that they loved, sending them through to people on the radio.
So it's actually, you know, through the hip-hop DJs, the guys who were looking for great beats from classic soul records, they were really the first to go looking for people like Sil and these other soul artists that we've been talking about.
I mean, I think there's always been fans, but they're the ones who can put it in and send it to a broader audience. You know, there's always been fans who would get the record and tell their friends, this is a great song. But the hip-hop artists who put them in, the Wu-Tang Clan, or put, you know, whoever it was, sampled it, they send it to a much broader and a newer audience. They're not the converted already.
Well, Sil Johnson, at age 73, here you are, still at it, still touring, and a whole new generation of people, thanks to artists like the Wu-Tang Clan, who know your music. It's got to be really gratifying.
Let's talk about Chuck D. He wrote some great things about me on the Let Freedom Sing. Chuck D of the Public Enemy.
Of Public Enemy, yeah. Yes. Another fan of the great soul music of the 60s and 70s. Sil Johnson is taking part tomorrow in the Eccentric Soul Review at the Music Hall of Williamsburg with the Notations and Ronaldo Domino and the local hip-hop artist Missy G. That's tomorrow night at 8. Sil, it's been a real pleasure having you with us on Soundcheck today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, and thanks for your comment, Ben. Oh, wow, I really love and the things that you were saying.
Ben Greenman is editor of The New Yorker magazine and author of the rock novel Please Step Back. Ben, nice to have you on the program as well. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, John. It was a pleasure, Sil.
Thanks, Ben.
All right.
Still to come, our soulful sound check continues as singer Sara Tavares shares music from her new album called Jinty. Tomorrow, we look back at one of the defining rock critics who emerged in the 60s, former New York Times writer, the late Robert Palmer. Tomorrow on Soundcheck.